Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ray McGovern, a retired CIA officer turned political activist. He served under seven U.S. presidents over 27 years, presenting the morning intelligence briefings at the White House for many of them. He currently heads the Speaking Truth to Power section of the Ecumenical Church of the Savior in inner city Washington. And in 2003, he helped create Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity to expose the way intelligence was being falsified to justify war on Iraq. He recently met with Edward Snowden in Moscow. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ray McGovern.
Thank you, Ian.
And tell us about your meeting. It was described in the New York Times recently when they did an article on Edward Snowden and whether or not he's going to be working for some internet company in Moscow. That described the meeting where you went in a van with blackened windows. It sounded like your old days in the intelligence world. What were the conditions of the meeting, and how did you get there, and what was your general impression of who's in charge, if you will? Does the FSB control Edward Snowden?
Well, getting back to the blackened windows and this kind of thing, none of us told any New York Times reporter that we went with blackened windows. It was not the case. We were taken to a place where we met Edward Snowden, and we had a very, very warm award ceremony where we gave him the Sam Adams Award for Integrity and Intelligence. And then we kicked back with him for about 5.5 hours, had a nice dinner, and compared notes with all that was going on. He, of course, was interested first and foremost in what we could tell him that would supplement what he already knew about his major concern, and that, of course, was that he would have sacrificed everything, literally everything, perhaps even his life, and nothing would happen. We asked him, Ed, are you satisfied now that things are happening? And he gave us this broad smile. And then actually Colleen Rowley and Jesselyn Radek were able to fill him in on some of the particulars of the legislation that is now moving forward that he is really largely responsible for. So that was very warm. It was also the case that when we walked into that room and he was already there, when he saw Tom Drake, Tom being the whistleblower from NSA who went through channels and was actually persecuted and not prosecuted by the Department of Justice, but when he revealed the abuses going on at NSA, they turned the tide on him and accused him of 10 felonies, 35 years worth of prison ahead of him. And when the case was dismissed, the judge in Maryland said, look, you Department of Justice lawyers should be ashamed of yourselves. Don't ever bring a case like this before me again. So why do I mention that? Well, because Edward Snowden mentioned in his very first interview in Hong Kong that the reason he got out of Dodge, so to speak, was because he saw what happened to a fellow who tried to go through channels, namely Tom Drake. So there they are together.
Right, but I had Tom out here at the USA Hammer Forum that I moderate recently, and he made it very, very clear that he did not take any documents out of the NSA, not a thing. In fact, they tried to nail him by reclassifying something that was declassified that he happened to have in his possession. So isn't there a fundamental difference here that Edward Snowden seems to have taken a treasure trove of documents and from the NSA?
That's exactly right. Yeah. What he wanted to do was to fulfill his obligation under the oath he took to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that included the Fourth Amendment as far as Ed Snowden was concerned. He was part of the gross violations of the Fourth Amendment. And when he realized that and his conscience sort of pricked him, he said, you know, I need to find some way to let the other Americans know about this. And the only way I can do that is not by doing what Thomas Drake did, try to report these abuses through channels. No, I need to go abroad and do it there. And he very artfully set up this secure communication system with with Greenwald and Poitras, and did his thing in Hong Kong. Now, what was really interesting about this is that it's very clear to me that clever and smart and well planning ahead as he was, after Hong Kong, when he gave the material over, he had no real forward plan. As for Greenwald and Poitras, you know, they're not social workers, they're journalists, so they went home and wrote their stories. And there's Ed Snowden, all along with the Chinese closing in on him in Hong Kong. To the rescue, WikiLeaks. This is a big story. WikiLeaks sent down Sarah Harrison, one of Julian Assange's lieutenants, and she worked something out so that he could get a ticket via Moscow back to down to Latin America, where he had been offered asylum. Now, the supreme irony, of course, is that the U.S. withdrew his passport, and when he got to Moscow, he had to wait for 5 weeks or so in the interim lounge there at Sheremetyevo Airport. And finally, he sought asylum in Russia. Russia decided that they'd obey international law this time, granted him the asylum. Bottom line, he could not possibly be in a place more safe for him than he is right now. And when I asked him, I asked Ed Snowden, I said, Ed, are you aware that just 4 days ago, the head of the former head of the NSA and CIA, Mike Hayden, had very broadly hinted that you should be put on the kill list, and that a minute later, the head of the House Intelligence Committee chimed in with, yeah, I can help you on that. Are you aware of that? And Ed said, yeah, I am. He kind of winced and said, yeah, I keep up on all that stuff. So he's well informed. He has a computer there. And, of course, he's keeping very close track on what's happening as a result of his disclosures.
So how does he feel about being in a country led by Putin, who is hardly a champion of democracy? He's basically shut down the press, controlled the judiciary. He basically regulates the oligarchs, and he essentially it's a sort of, you know, KGB incorporated country, you know, largely led by a political gangster.
Well, Ian, I'd ask you to put yourself in Ed's place. He achieved his aim. He's safe. The only possible place he could be this safe is in Russia, where the head of the CIA is not going to send in drones, and the head of the army is not going to send in SEAL Team 6. So I think that Ed Snowden's perspective here is that that he's grateful. Mm-hmm. He's grateful that in this case, Putin decided to take the high road, obey international law, and take him in for a year. Now, further than that, you know, I don't think Snowden's all that seized with what else is going on in Russia, nor do I think he should be at this particular point in time. And for those who say that he's under Russian control, well, he's under Russian protection, and Putin's not going to let a damn thing happen to Ed Snowden, and that's to his credit. But under their control, I didn't sense that. I didn't sense that at all, and neither does Ed Snowden.
But how does Snowden feel about, maybe he's not aware of how much the focus has shifted away from the original revelations about the metadata collections and spying on Americans that led to a very close vote in the House. And you mentioned that you talked to him about bills underway to curb the NSA's abuses. It seems that of late, every day, there's a new revelation of spying abroad. And as our first guest, who was a former lawyer for Lon Snowden, Edward's father, was Bruce Fine, was pointing out that spying on Angela Merkel is not a violation of American law. And all the focus has been lately on NSA's behavior abroad, which is what they're going to reform in the in the bill. They're not going to apparently address what the NSA is doing domestically, which is where the real violations are. And Glenn Greenwald has basically promised the worst is yet to come. So there's no question that the press's focus is going to be on all of these sensational revelations involving foreign intelligence, as opposed to the real story, which is what's happening here at home.
Well, that's a very good point. Dianne Feinstein, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, is really giving hypocrisy a bad name here. She's been the cheerleader for gross violations, I would say the trashing of the Fourth Amendment. But now she's in high dudgeon. She doesn't like the notion that Angela Merkel's Handy, that's what the Germans call it, das Handy, her little cell phone is being monitored. Well, give me a break. You know, give me a break. That is legal under U.S. law. Trashing the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution is blatantly illegal and a violation of her oath to defend the Constitution. So you know, this is a very good point, and the distinction is very important to draw, especially for an intelligence officer. I know what you can get from intercepting communications. The only question with respect to our work abroad is, you know, whether there's any sense of proportionality here, any weighing of the potential risks. Are we doing this simply because we have all the money in the world to do it and all the technology that permits us to do it? Or are we focusing our effort on real terrorist plots? Now, one German who was in Washington this week commented, I quote, "Of course, we are not considering our chancellor as a terrorist," period, end quote. Well, okay, that says it all.
So what do you think will happen then? I mean, apart from the fact that we're probably none of these bills seem to be addressing the real issues over NSA domestic spying, and if more of these sensational stories about abuses of the NSA's, well, not the abuses, it's what they do. I mean, they're in the business of signals intelligence, and it just seems that because they have such an enormous capability, they're just doing what they can do rather than thinking about the consequences. But that seems to indicate a lack of political control. Maybe Alexander will have to take the bridge of the Starship Enterprise with him into retirement, and maybe Clapper is going to be sacrificed for his constant lying to the Congress. But it doesn't look like anything good's going to come out of this legislatively. And as I say, more is going to come from Glenn Greenwald. So in a year's time, where do you think when Snowden's asylum's up in Moscow, what do you think's going to happen?
Well, in a year's time, I see Snowden being treated like Daniel Ellsberg is treated now. And I'm not saying saint, and I'm not saying hero. I'm saying patriot, a defender of our Constitution. Now, again, the distinction, abuses within our country, crass abuses of our constitutional rights, they need to be reined in. Abroad, that's a different sort of question. It's just kind of adult supervision being necessary there, excesses being always excesses. So what I would suggest here is what I've been suggesting to European interviewers, and that is this. The West Europeans are in high dudgeon now. This is the latest of a series of abuses and usurpations. They were cajoled into kidnapping people for us, putting them in black prisons on European soil, having them subjected to what we call enhanced interrogation techniques, which, by the way, is a direct literal translation of Verschärfte Vernehmung, from the Gestapo handbook, enhanced interrogation technique. They did all that. Now in this latest indignity, how are they going to react? What I've been appealing to them to do is to, it's their turn. My father and his generation drove fascists out of Europe. Now it's their turn. We have no experience. We have no historical perspective on what it's like to live under fascism. And what I'm saying here is that when you have the government and the intelligence services and the secret services and the corporations and the Congress and the media all enmeshed in this complicity, you have incipient fascism, and do not blanch before the word. What I'm appealing to the West Europeans to do is to educate us, to tell us how dangerous this is, this incipient fascism, what happened to them, and give us some lessons from history as to how we can stop it before it's too late.
Well, just in closing, Ray McGovern, there also seems to be this other component, which is a form of right-wing welfare, the privatization of public service. We know our politicians go through the revolving door and cash in public service for private gain. And we also know that the privatization mania has taken over since Ronald Reagan taken over the intelligence business. I think 70% of their budget goes to these private entities that, like the one that Snowden worked for, that gets 98% of its money from the federal government. We also saw the crash of the website for the healthcare.gov because these people basically what is referred to in your part of the world as beltway bandits. So I did an interview recently with CIA officer Bob Baer, who made the argument that he thought that Snowden was a Russian intelligence asset going back to 2009, and that's what he thinks is happening. But he also went ballistic on the privatization of intelligence and said that that's why all this NSA, what the real subtext of all this NSA spying abroad is, not so much on what Merkel ordered from the delicatessen on a cell phone, but economic intelligence. And that's because private entities are more interested in economic intelligence than traditional national security targets.
Well, Bob is right. It's explicit in the NSA documents that economic advantage is sought vis-a-vis Japan and Brazil, diplomatic advantage vis-a-vis everybody else. So the economic advantage is factual. With respect to contractors, well, you know, it has to do with money. And if a contractor is hired, for example, to evaluate how dangerous Iran is to U.S. interests, and the contractor knows full well what the answer could be that the contracting officer and his outfit want, then you don't have what we used to have, and that is an intelligence outfit that had an analysis division that spoke truth to power, told it like it is. What you have are people make a lot of money by serving up to the government what they think the government needs to hear. Now, besides all that, you have people in Bob Baer's previous discipline, the case officers and the spies, running all over the world and not even being staffers, not even being government employees anymore, and working all kinds of their imaginative mischief. So it's a real problem, and the problem is mostly the money. If we took the money that we spend, the excessive money we spent on intelligence and defense, there would be no problem with food stamps. There would be no problem with building our schools or our infrastructure. Our priorities are all askew, and you have it right on the head. It's because the folks in our Congress are on the take. They're profiting magnificently, and they're not caring very much about the common person.
Well, Ray McGovern, I thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Ray McGovern, a retired CIA officer turned political activist. He served under seven U.S. presidents over 27 years, presenting the morning intelligence briefings at the White House for many of them. He currently leads the Speaking Truth to Power section of the Ecumenical Church of the Savior in inner city Washington. And in 2003, he helped create Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity to expose the way intelligence was being falsified to justify war on Iraq. He recently met with Edward Snowden in Moscow. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the filmmakers of the new film, The Square.